I want to thank Bob Dineen and the RFA board for inviting me to speak today. I have to admit that I was a bit hesitant in accepting this invitation. Many of my colleagues at Marathon Petroleum asked if I would be comfortable delivering a message that may not be well received. However, Bob helped me to overcome these concerns. And you may have seen an advertisement for this conference promoting me as keynote speaker. Bob was quoted as saying, "I think it is critical that we be open to the message of our customer." Marathon Petroleum has a great story to tell based on our long experience in going to market with ethanol blended gasoline products. We also have strong opinions on future trends and policies that may affect our markets. So I decided to accept this invitation, come to the National Ethanol Conference, tell Marathon Petroleum's story, as well as share where we stand on the issues challenging our industries. I hope that you will find my comments have balance, and I ask you to follow Bob's lead and be open to the message of your customer. I've divided my presentation into three parts. First, I need to get everybody up to speed on Marathon Petroleum's scope of operations and footprint. Next, I want to present how Marathon Petroleum goes to market with our ethanol blended gasoline offerings. Finally, I will address the critical issues that are impacting Marathon Petroleum as a result of the RFS biofuel blending mandates. So let's talk about Marathon Petroleum Corporation. MPC is the fourth largest refiner in the U.S. and a Fortune 50 company with 2013 revenues exceeding $100 billion. With geographically and strategically aligned operations across the entire downstream value chain, MPC is an industry leader emphasizing safe and reliable operations. The company's extensive transportation and distribution assets and operations distinguish MPC from other refining and marketing companies. This extensive logistical system allows MPC to optimize the supply of crude oil and other feedstocks into our nearly 1.7 million barrel per day crude oil refining system and the distribution of refined products produced at these refineries. MPC markets through two strong retail brands, Speedway and Marathon. Speedway operates one of the largest chains of company-owned and operated retail gasoline and convenience stores in the Midwest, and the fourth largest in the U.S., with approximately 1,480 locations in seven states. Marathon brand is an established motor fuel brand in the Midwest and Southeast regions of the U.S. and is available through approximately 5,200 independently owned and operated retail outlets. Marathon Petroleum is also a large wholesale supplier of gasoline and distillate to resellers and consumer end users within its market area. Independent retailers, unbranded jobbers, airlines, transportation companies, railroads, marine companies and utilities form the core of MPC's wholesale customer base. Light product sales are made at 65 company-owned and operated and 61 third-party terminals throughout the 17 states. With a long history dating back to the earliest years of the oil industry, MPC and its 28,000 employees are focused on delivering value to our stakeholders and customers. So how does Marathon Petroleum go to market with ethanol-blended gasoline products? A typical supply chain starts with the manufacturer and ends with a customer. This approach has a feel of pushing the products on the consumer and assumes they will line up to make their purchases. This push type of supply chain can lead to significant cost inefficiencies or worse, result in underused or stranded investments, especially if manufacturers miss their projections of what the customer demands. in the Marathon Petroleum transportation fuel supply chain, it all starts with our customers and their demand for our transportation fuels. Our customers demand quality fuels, readily available 24 hours a day throughout our terminal and retail system. Their demand provides the pull of our fuels through the supply system. We then work backwards through the supply chain towards our petroleum refineries and ethanol plants. This demand-pull approach drives efficient asset investments and modifications. A great example is at our petroleum refineries, where we have invested over many years to reconfigure the production of gasoline blending components to take advantage of the octane value of ethanol. This approach also drives our business processes so that we understand our marginal production and supply costs and operate an optimized system. The graphic on the screen illustrates the multitude of pathways that we employ in moving gasoline and ethanol to our customers from our refineries and ethanol plants. From a supply chain management perspective, the ethanol system must be slightly more reliable than the gasoline system. If this is not the case, we will have the 90% waiting on the 10%. That is not a good outcome for our customers. If you dig deeper, opportunities to optimize the supply chain begin to emerge. MPC was an early adopter of ethanol blending. We began investing in ethanol blending systems at our terminals decades ago, before any mandates were in place based solely on blending economics. We started in the Midwest, as ethanol plants were built in our core marketing area. We leveraged our integrated supply chain to deliver E10 ethanol blends through our Speedway brand. We began to duplicate this effort in our southeastern states marketing area 8 years ago as more ethanol manufacturing capacity was built, and we used the same economic drivers with the same successful results. In 2012, MPC blended 1 billion gallons of ethanol at our terminals. This level of blending exceeded our obligated volumes because it was profitable, not because we were forced to do so by the mandate. The next opportunity for MPC was to integrate ethanol manufacturing into our supply chain. We have invested in 3 ethanol plants with our joint venture partner, the Andersons. Our plants stand as industry examples of how to maintain and reliably operate ethanol facilities with excellent safety, technical, and environmental performance. MPC has also invested in biofuels technology development through Mascoma Incorporated. As a board member there, I am impressed by the people at Mascoma and their dedicated efforts to introduce cost-effective technology to corn ethanol manufacturing while continuing to develop cellulosic ethanol technology and opportunities. Given scale investments in the terminal blending system and equity production in our ethanol plants, our next opportunity at MPC was a large-scale optimization of the distribution system. This slide shows the locations of our ethanol plants and a 100-mile radius that surrounds the facilities. Add in the location of our terminals and a pattern starts to emerge. Early in my talk, I called out the Speedway retail brand and its 1,480 store fleet that serves about 2.4 million customers each day. In the early days, our ability to place E10 blends at our Speedway stores played a critical role in developing our ethanol blending program. Currently, all of the Speedway stores offer E10 and about 10% of the fleet is configured for E85 sales. Layering in the Speedway stores locations completes the picture. The critical mass of stores, terminals, ethanol plants, and ethanol plants provide significant transportation optimization opportunities and cost savings. This is the Marathon Petroleum way of conducting our business. Quality assets integrated into scale operation and optimized by our people, tools, and business process. Finally, I want to address the critical issues that are impacting Marathon Petroleum as a result of the RFS biofuel blending mandates. Simply put, Marathon Petroleum supports corn ethanol and opposes mandates. Mandates distort markets and result in unintended consequences. This was clearly demonstrated by the RIN price blowout that we experienced in 2013. The fundamental issue with the RFS ethanol mandate is that it is a market distorting attempt to transform the entire transportation fuel industry and has resulted in the E10 blend wall. Changes in transportation fuel manufacturing, distribution, and consumption require simultaneous development of three very different but connected industries: transportation fuel production, automobile manufacturing, and transportation fuel distribution and retail marketing. What are the issues for these three industries? First, the fuel producers. A new fuel formulation must be developed and the investments made to manufacture the fuel at commercial scale while maintaining the ability to manufacture and distribute the legacy fuel. Second, the automobile manufacturers. The engine and vehicle technology that will consume the new fuel formulation must be developed and tested with the new fuel. The engine technology is then introduced to the consumer, allowing for acceptance of the fuel and for the 15 to 17 year turnover of the transportation vehicle fleet. The endorsement of the engine manufacturers is critical to the success of the new fuel formulation. And third, transportation fuel distributors and retail marketers. Transportation fuel distribution system, including terminals, pipelines, retail stores, all must be modified to safely handle and market the new fuel and the legacy fuel while the vehicle fleet turnover progresses. Based on our Speedway experience, this takes about a 20-year investment cycle at the retail store level. These are all massive industries, and it takes decades to affect the transformation contemplated by the RFS. Artificial mechanisms, like the RFS ethanol mandate, intended to dramatically accelerate this timeline, will likely result in a market distortion and an escalation in costs. This is the reality of the E10 blend wall. So what are the options for a refiner to comply with the RFS once the E10 blend wall has been reached? The options fall into two categories: increase ethanol blending and reduce domestic transportation fuel sales. Increased blending of ethanol would require the expansion of E85 sales or the introduction of E15 sales. As I mentioned earlier in our speech, our Speedway fleet is configured to offer E85 at about 10% or 146 convenience stores. Speedway has offered E85 for years, but has experienced relatively poor customer acceptance, resulting in limited sales volumes. To date, these infrastructure investments have not produced the desired returns. In this context, it makes sense that the entrepreneurs and business owners that own 95% of the retail fuel station fleet might be reluctant to risk their capital on infrastructure that does not offer return. MPC has also invested in infrastructure to offer E85 at our terminals in the southeastern states. Demand at the wholesale rack level is non-existent, even when the RIN prices peaked last year. I've read many academic articles that analyze the size of the flex fuel fleet and the E85 supply capacity, and they somehow conclude that billions of gallons of ethanol demand can be unleashed under the right market conditions. Based on our extensive real-world experience of going to market with this fuel, E85 sales have limited growth potential and will not be the silver bullet that provides a workable RFS compliance option for refiners. An attempt to accelerate by mandate the market penetration of E85 could potentially result in a rapid increase in RIN prices. The introduction of E15 is a non-starter for obligated parties due primarily to liability issues. Additionally, E15 has the same distribution system and retail infrastructure issues as E85. Keep in mind that there is extensive research that shows E15 causes engine damage and fuel system damage in a significant portion of the light-duty vehicle fleet. This research would likely be used against refiners and retailers. The ethanol industry is also at risk here, as consumer confidence in the ethanol-blended fuels might be compromised. We saw the same pattern with MTBE, and we know how it ends. Reducing domestic transportation fuel sales would require reducing fuel production at our refineries or increasing exports of petroleum fuel products. U.S. refineries are among the most efficient in the world and benefit from low natural gas prices. The RIN cost is actually an operating cost for our refineries and is modeled as such when making production decisions. Hiring costs could overcome our efficiency advantages and result in reduced transportation fuel production. An alternative is to export the petroleum fuel product, which avoids the RIN altogether. Essentially, refiners have been forced into a position with few viable compliance mechanisms that, when taken together, do not generate enough RINs to meet our ever-escalating RFS obligations. The result is the E10 blend wall and the prospect of potentially crippling RIN costs. Layering RIN fraud issues, being forced to purchase waivers for not blending cellulosic ethanol that does not exist, and significant consumer demand for ethanol-free gasoline, it should not be a surprise that refiners deem the RFS as unworkable and that it requires a solution in the form of a waiver or outright repeal. Now, I know many of you in this audience today will likely push back on my position here, but I would counter by saying that the current market participants appear to see significant risks in investing their capital in product distribution and retail marketing segments to increase ethanol blending due to high costs and lack of consumer interest. I've also heard a message on fuel choice and the need for ethanol manufacturers to gain access to the fuel consumer. Again, I would counter by saying that only 5% of the retail store fleet is owned by obligated parties and can hardly be considered a constraint to accessing the fuel consumer. However, if ethanol producers think that the current market participants have misread the market risks and potential consumer demand, it may be an opportunity to invest in or partner with other segments of the transportation fuel supply chain. If ethanol producers want to grow ethanol demand, they need to do it by putting their capital at risk, entering new market segments, and building a base of customers that demand your product. In closing, I want to state that Marathon Petroleum supports corn ethanol because it is a transportation fuel and we are in a transportation fuel business. Marathon Petroleum has a history of profitably investing significant capital in corn ethanol production, logistics, blending, and retail infrastructure. We market corn ethanol brands through our Speedway brand. What Marathon Petroleum does not support is government intervention in our markets and mandates that attempt to force products on our customers. I want to again thank Bob Dineen and Neil McKinstry for inviting me to keynote the NEC today. I read that the goal of a keynote speaker is to set the tone for the conference. I am not sure that I set the tone here that you expected, but I do appreciate your willingness to hear Marathon Petroleum's ethanol story, and I also hope that you consider Marathon Petroleum a credible voice on RFS issues. Thank you.